The book we're discussing tonight, The Dual Soul Connection. Well, we've got our own dual soul connection right there with that song, The Righteous Brothers, Soul and Inspiration, a number one hit back in 1966, and that still sounds really good. Susie Henson has been my guest for the last hour. We're going to be joined now, though, by one of the reasons that her book caught my attention is because the other name that's on the cover is Dr. Rudy Shield, who is he's the real deal. I mean, he is emeritus career astronomer at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. He's the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Cosmology. He's written more than 300 scientific papers on things like quasars and black holes. He is also the executive director of FREE, the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. And you ask yourself, what's a solid mainstream scientist like him doing in a topic like this? We're going to ask him himself right after this on Coast to Coast AM. I think, folks, you've heard me mention this name many times on the program, the late Dr. John Mack, who was a friend of mine. We were great buddies or something, but I was privileged to know him and to interview him a couple of times. I thought he had incredible courage because he put his career and his credibility on the line in listening to and taking seriously the stories told him by dozens of abductees, contactees, people who told stories about extraordinary experiences and interactions in their lives with some kind of alien being. And Dr. Mack of Harvard Medical School really paid a price for taking these folks seriously and listening to them honestly and writing about it. And his friend, Dr. Rudy Shield, his friend and colleague, has sort of followed the same path. Dr. Shield, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, George.
I mean, you must get that question all the time. What's a guy like you doing in a topic like this?
Well, George, you know, if you're any scientist at all, what you really are obliged to do is go to the thing that's hardest to describe and explain, and here I am. If beings are being here and visiting us from the far away in space, how do they get here? And by what means do they do this telepathy that all of these abductees are describing? What is the science involved? And I have taken the point of view that we often do when we go into a theater. Namely, I don't have these experiences. They're not real and firsthand to me, but let's hear what they are, and then let's suspend disbelief, hear the story, and then work out how would science have to change to accommodate such strange things in the universe.
You know, you could ask the question, why would a person of your credentials study something like UFOs or abductions and contactees? The real question should be, why wouldn't you?
Well, that's it exactly. Scientist is supposed to mean you have this in this unsupported curiosity. You really need to know things, and so let's go there. All right, let's go.
Have they come after you? Have you paid a price?
It's hard to know. I often hear funny clicks and weeks and noises in my telephone, and that's probably the switching on of some kind of automatic gear because I said the wrong thing. But I can't ever know, so let's just not worry about that.
What is it about Susie Hansen's story that grabbed you?
It is so extraordinarily rich in technical details. Her description of flying a spacecraft, what she experienced, and the way the spacecraft are controlled, her elaborate descriptions of the character of the beings, the kinds of things they said to her. And also, I feel as though, like you, I've had a long association with John Mack, and I know the questions that he was asking, and I feel that Susie Hansen's book answers all of them.
And do you feel that we're on the cusp of something really important for humans?
I think there can be no doubt of that. I think that Susie Hansen's book makes the case that this really all started with the terrible events at the end of World War II, the atomic catastrophes at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and how that sent a signal of anger and fear throughout the world that we were dealing with forces that we couldn't really gracefully accept and work with. And so the universe responded with first a program of reconnaissance. And so in the 1950s and 60s era, you were hearing about sightings of spaceships in unexplained and weird places. often associated with the military. Then in the 70s and 80s, you started hearing about people having contact with aliens and Alien Boot Camp of Jim Sparks. And then in the 90s and aughts era, you started to hear about the Program for Advancement on Earth and what the apparently the alien children were doing to advance our civilization, all in a well-meaning program to assist our civilization, though I am aware that there are some people who say that not all alien interventions are positive.
Yeah, I'm attracted to this this book and to Susie's story for the same reason you are. This is not a typical abduction story. I mean, it has its own cosmology, its own theology, a detailed history, rich in detail on technical details that we've barely touched on. Susie, I'm going to ask you to tell the story, well, two stories. First, the one that Dr. Shield was just referring to, what these beings told you about nuclear weapons as sort of a catalyst for them being here. What did they say?
Okay, well, they took me into a room that I call it was like a virtual reality room, and there was this galaxy screen is the name I gave it, this large screen that had an image of our galaxy on it. And he was able to create in the air in this room any kind of virtual reality show of any part of that of the galaxy that you wanted to put your finger on the grid on the screen. And up, he said he was going to show me something really important, that I may be shocked, that I may be affected by it, but he wanted me to see it. And so in the room, in a virtual reality show, he brought up our planet, and he took us to exactly the time when the bombings took place, the two times that they took place, and showed me the shockwave that came out from them. Now, this was in 1980 that I saw this, 1978 to 80, and I saw in the virtual reality display this terrific shockwave that went out from the planet, right out and beyond into space in this virtual reality show, if I can put it that way. And it was made clear to me the terrible damage that we were doing with this kind of technology, misuse of this technology, and not only what it was doing to our atmosphere, but beyond our atmosphere into the solar system and beyond. Now, more recently, in more recent years, we have developed high-speed photography that can actually see the shock waves from explosions, etc. So right back in the early 80s, he was showing me this in this virtual reality scenario and warning me that throughout my life I must bring this to people's attention, the damage that we are doing in this respect. Now, New Zealand has a long history of being anti-nuclear. We've campaigned for years. We don't allow nuclear ships in our waters, which didn't please America very much for a while. And we were very much against the testing in the Pacific that France did for many, many years. And so this grey who showed me this said he delved into my mind to pull out terminology that I would understand. And he pulled out the terminology that seeing this would put fire in my belly, that it would make me campaign against this kind of thing. It would make me want to talk to people about the damage that's being done, and not only to our civilization, but potentially beyond.
I know that I'm a few miles away from perhaps the most nuked place in the world, the Nevada test site, which had more bombs than almost anywhere. And we know about the lies that were told to the American public and the world public about the consequences. The don't worry, it's completely harmless. And of course, radioactive fallout caused so many cancers. Rudy, what about that particular part of her story grabbed you? I would imagine it's the sort of the description of what you would call the quantum holograph kind of technology.
Well, yes. I've had to look into how to describe and understand the kinds of things that she is saying when she talks about travel over long distances, and the kinds of light that she sees on the spacecraft, and then the very existence of the phenomena like telepathy and seeing things in the past and in the future, things that seem to be in the universe at all times. And the only way that I know that can describe these is to adopt the quantum hologram formulation of the quantum field, much as Dr. Mitchell has given it to us. And in just a sentence or two, I would say that just as a physicist have taught us that the description of any particle in the universe, any proton, any neutron, any electron, is given by a quantum field, so now we have to accept that not only is the information about particles, but also of conscious behavior and of emotional state and of soul connection, all of that carried by that same quantum field.
Let's talk about telepathy for a moment. You just touched on it. Susie, describe for me how these beings communicated with each other and with you. Was it always mental, or did they ever speak? Was there any kind of sound?
I'd say 98% of the time it was telepathic, but on odd occasions I did hear them vocalize. A tinkling crystalline sound is how I described it, but at other times also like a clicking kind of a sound. The vocalization usually occurred when they were trying to express great love or joy towards me, and that's when I would hear this sound emit from their mouth. But the rest of the time, telepathic, and it's as if all your senses are turned topsy-turvy and upside down, because you don't rely on the senses in the same way that we do here on Earth. We have our five senses, and they're quite clear-cut. On the craft, when they are speaking, communicating with you telepathically, you are alive. All your senses come alive, because the information is not just conveyed like a voice in your head, although there are at times that you perceive it that way, but you get images, you may get odors, you may get feelings. All of those things become a round package that is telepathy. So it's not just simply conveying a message. It's much, much more than that. It's much more holistic, as if you can reach into it and draw out so much more information just from that telepathic signal that they give you. That frequency contains so much more than just a voice or a message.
Susie, do you remember smells from inside the craft?
That's one thing I do not have much in the way of memory of at all, is smells. I mean, people talk about, some of the smells that they have experienced on board craft, but no, it's always very sterile and clean and very auspicious, and I do not have a strong recollection of actual odors. I have a recollection of odors in the sense that I just explained, as part of a telepathic interaction, but not actually odors as in walking down a corridor and smelling a particular smell.
Dr. Shield, her description of telepathic communication, a lot of your colleagues, the mainstream scientists, would say that's a bunch of baloney. You, however, know that there is some cutting-edge research that's pretty darn good. Dean Radin and folks like that who've proven in lab conditions that there is something to this.
Yes. Could I just relate to the work of Dean Radin, because it's
sure.
So important. It shows that there is an energy associated with consciousness, because his experiment showed that human consciousness can affect a physical system. In this case of his experiment, it was a laser interferometer device. So a machine that has lasers and has an optical setup, and then optical electronic detectors and automatic pattern recognition devices was arranged. And subjects, like graduate students, were asked attention on and attention off under computer command. And the student's conscious awareness and perception and attention was literally shown to be able to affect the operation of the physical laser interferometer. So we have to assume that there is some energy associated with consciousness, and that is what's being exchanged by people in the act of telepathy. Interestingly, we believe that it's not restricted to the speed of light. It's quantum in nature, and following physicist Szilard's discovery that quantum is much faster than the speed of light. He measured it to exceed 10,000 times the speed of light and maybe instantaneous. That shows that telepathy allows communication over vast distances instantaneously and also contains some kind of energy which other minds can tap into, and we call that the quantum hologram after Edgar Mitchell.
I can see quantum theory and quantum mechanics getting published as papers in a scientific journal, but you're not going to see articles about telepathy getting published somewhere where your average scientist, university professor could read about it. I mean, most of your colleagues, they wouldn't give this a time of day because they never see anything that they can read and put their heads around.
All true. I actually took Dean Radin's paper and handed it to a couple of my colleagues, some postdocs here at Harvard University in the Harvard University Brain Research Department. And they were all excited by this and told me how they intend to get their dean's permission to repeat these experiments and then extend them. But after a day or two, I got no back feed from them, and after a week nothing came back, and so I asked them what happened with your meeting with the dean, and I was told the dean had advised them, take no part in this, you will never be refunded for such research, it will be a career breaker, stop it, end it right now. So I'm not proud of my university in this regard, that here we are supposed to be at the hot point of research. But apparently, research into psychological effects of this kind is simply not to be undertaken here.
I don't get it, because, I mean, if a university isn't the environment where this could take place, where you could have the academic freedom to pursue whatever you want to pursue, assuming you're doing it correctly and following protocols, I mean, where is it supposed to happen?
Agreed. Now, I'm not telling you that I'm antagonistic to my university entirely, because you remember that there was the affair with John Mack.
Yeah.
You brought it up earlier when his tenure was threatened at the university. But after an inquiry, it was decided that what he was doing was no more radical than other things being undertaken in science. And so at that moment, the university did something that I'm very proud of. Do you know that after the action against him, as legal action was being undertaken, and when the university had ruled in his favor, John told me that the next day the dean of his department had an appointment with him in his office at 9 o'clock in the morning, and at that time told John, you know, you have to broaden your research. You're at a great university, and don't go it alone. Your university can supply you with more options. You have people interested in the history of science, interested in theology, interested in science itself. You must broaden your outreach to those and make this more credible to other scientists. And
awesome.
At that moment, I was very proud of my university.
Yeah, and did that happen, though?
Yes, it did. Dr. Mack initiated a program of what was called an interdisciplinary conference. This occurred at the premises of the Divinity School on the campus, and about 50 scholars from all over the country and involved in history of science, philosophy, psychiatry, and in my own case, the physical sciences, got together, discussed this. We listened to testimony by some of John's abductees, six of them, and we then met in closed session and resolved to study this further.
We're going to go to a break here in about 30 seconds. When we come back, Susie, I'd like you to tell the story about the journey through the center of the Earth, and then have Rudy sort of analyze the scientific aspect of it. Before we go to the break, though, Rudy, when people ask you, are you endorsing Susie's account, what do you say to them?
What I have to say is, as a scientist, I didn't see these things myself. I have never seen a UFO or an alien being, and so I can only say I'm 99% convinced that these things actually happen, but I always have to have a 1% reservation.
All right, we're going to take a break. Thunderclap Newman, Something in the Air, from 1969. Take us into the break. Back in a moment with Susie Hansen and Dr. Rudy Shield. Much more to come on Coast to Coast. The unmistakable pipes of late great rock pioneer Roy Orbison from 1963, In Dreams. We're talking with Susie Hansen, author of the new book, The Dual Soul Connection, and our co-guest, Dr. Rudy Shield, getting into some pretty fascinating stuff about experiences that Susie says she had, including an amazing flight right through the center of the planet. We'll get to that right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Susie Hansen, I thought one of the most compelling stories that you tell in the Dual Soul Connection was about flying through the middle of the planet, zipping right through. Can you describe in as much detail as you can recall what that experience was, why it was done?
Okay, well, this is one of the experiences that I have quite extensive conscious memory of. And I found myself on a grey craft where I was introduced to what I would call a flight crew who were going to take me on a flying experience. It was explained to me that this is something that's done with humans from time to time. I was being taken to see what I could absorb, how I could utilize teaching that had been given to me and information that had been I'd been taught over a number of years. The interesting thing is that this flight crew were actually human-like. They were very tall. They were very slim, very elegant-looking in tight suits. They weren't the short greys, the tall greys. They looked very much like me, only taller. I got the sense that they were very advanced as to whether they were from our future or what they were. I was not actually told, and I felt so daunted by their presence that I didn't ask. Everything was very officious and running to a time schedule, so I followed them through the hangar area of a large craft to a smaller craft, what I call a scout craft, and was taken on board there. I could recall the next day in vivid detail what the interior of the craft looked like, what the technology was capable of doing, and what we did throughout the experience. So once the door of the craft, the ramp, had closed, there was no consciousness of actual movement, but I knew that we were moving. And what I call the window screens around the exterior of the walls were closed, so they just looked like walls. These are screens that have different functions that can suddenly just open up as a window or disappear again. And eventually they told me that they would open the screens up soon and I'd be able to see where we were. When that happened, I was able to see that it was now daylight and that we were over hills that had trees, covered with trees with beautiful, vibrant autumn colours. And we just don't have anything like that in New Zealand. We do have autumn leaves, but certainly not whole hillsides of them such as I was seeing in daylight. So I'd assumed that we'd gone from the southern hemisphere to the northern hemisphere somewhere. Now, it was explained to me that they would teach me two modes to operate this small scout craft. One was a manual method and one was telepathic by connecting to the consciousness of the craft itself. So what I call the leader, the male who was doing the most communication with me, demonstrated to me how to operate the manual mode. I considered that I was probably going to be better at this because, you know, it's familiar with driving a car, etc., and I just had in my human mind that this would be the easiest for me. But as it turned out, it wasn't. It was actually the telepathic mode that was the easier one to do because it bypasses all the need to move muscles, ligaments, tendons, etc., all of those messages that operate physical movement in our body. So quite some time was spent teaching me this and allowing me to practice it. I can recall that the screens on the operational console that stood out in the middle of the craft were what I now understand to be 3D, but back in 1987 I'd never heard of that. And so I describe it as the images of topography and the position of the craft actually stood out from the screen, is how I described it back then. They stood out in the air, and of course I'd now call that 3D. At some stage they said, after I had mastered both of these modes of moving the craft and enabling it to do what we call the wobble position, when it is stationary, often called by UFO researchers the falling leaf movement of oscillation. We had to practice oscillating it correctly without tipping it one way too far or the other. And once I had mastered this over a period of time, they told me that it was time to go back and that they had a bit of a surprise for me. And the leader announced that we would be passing through the planet. Now, when he said this, I was struck with terrible anxiety and uncertainty. I felt as if a bomb had hit my stomach. I felt sick. I remember my palms sweating because I did not understand what this entailed. And he assured me that I should put aside the ghastly images of being incinerated because it wasn't going to be anything like that. Because I'm not a scientist, which is where Rudy comes in, because he is, he described it to me as, in effect, we would undergo a shift. The craft and everything in it would undergo some kind of shift, a temporary phase of movement where it would move us from one place to another. In that time, in that duration, we would pass right through the planet or right through the space that the planet takes up from point A to point B. So it was like moving along outside the current existence and then coming back in again, is the way he described it.
So
he took the craft right out into the atmosphere or just beyond, I'm not sure, but I could see the curvature of the Earth. I could see the landform and the ocean receding into the distance until there was a beautiful vista such as I'll never forget visible through the screen or the window, and quite breathtakingly. We hung there for a short time, and then he told me that we would go in at speed and I would see certain changes take place. Now, some of these changes would be visible on the screen. Normally, they would turn the screen off or make it disappear so as not to disturb the human who's on board. But because they could see that I was kind of a curious nature, they decided that they would leave it for me to watch. So we eventually, on the screen, I saw things begin to rotate into a spiral. And when I say the screen, I'm talking about a window screen, so we're actually seeing what's outside on a form of a screen. So there were changes in colour, there were strips of colour moving up and down, there was quite a dreadful sound, like a high-pitched scream that descended into like a graunching sound for a very short period of time, and then we were pretty much plunged into blackness. This went on for a short period of time with what I would describe as static showing on the screen. And then eventually it was as if we'd popped out of the air back into my part of the planet. It was dark again. And I could see lights along a coastline that we were rapidly moving towards. And I knew that I was soon to be delivered home. So it was quite a phenomenal experience, and the next day I had so much detail, emotions, sounds, visual images in my mind that it took me quite some time to think it through and document it back then. And it was one of the chapters that I was a little reluctant to send to Rudy because it just seemed so over the top. I thought, well, if anything's going to switch him off my experiences, it'll be this one, but Rudy seemed to lap it up and make sense out of it, so that was very reassuring.
Well, I'm going to ask Rudy about it in a second, but I'll just say this. If you want to put in a good word for me, I'd love to take that ride sometime, next time you talk to these guys. Rudy, what do you make of the technology she's describing, or the idea of passing through the space that's occupied by the planet? That was interesting.
Yes, it is extremely so. And in fact, an illustration that Susie had her husband draw of what it actually looked like through the screen she describes is so illustrative, because what the illustration carefully done by Susie and her husband shows is that the geometry and the space character of the path through the center of the Earth. So now looking at the Earth from afar, you see that space is distorted and a spiraling or vorticity becomes apparent. In other words, what I'm interpreting is that the spacecraft has arranged the phase information describing the atoms in the center of the Earth and throughout the whole course through the Earth. The spacecraft rearranged them in such a way that the spacecraft could pass through that by being slightly out of phase with the description of the material Earth. I think that a similar thing is commonly described by experiencers of abductions who talk yeah. about aliens walking through walls,
yep.
walking through doors. Again, they seem to just be able to pass through by engineering through consciousness that the atomic structure of matter is rephased slightly so that their particles, the particles describing themselves as beings, can take the spaces in the atoms by just arranging all of this information.
You know, Jacques Vallée, who's a colleague and maybe a friend of yours, certainly a friend of mine, who's described, you know, the phenomena that he's been studying for 50 years or so, it seems to have a technology that can manipulate space and time in ways that we do not understand. But if you could go through the planet, then you could also manipulate time, I would think, the same kind of thing, right?
Exactly right. And we in astronomy talk about space-time because we see that they are four coordinates describing our universe, which are mixed together in a relativistic way through the relativity theory, and so it gets mathematically more complex. But yes, I agree with all of your statements, and yes, I have met Jacques Vallée.
Susie, let's talk about medical stuff, because you had a variety of medical procedures over the years, some that seemed designed to help you recover from injuries that you suffered here on Earth, others that implanted things in you. Can you share with us some of that?
Yes. When I was 19, I had a rather horrific car accident. I was hit by a drunken driver, and I still suffer the effects of that, spinal injuries, etc. And they took me on board on a number of occasions put implants in my nose and in my ear. The one in my nose was supposed to be registering certain things about the brain, but the one in the ear was assisting me with balance, because after the accident I had quite a very serious neck injury, and it really upset my balance, and I found out that this is what they had done to assist me. There's always a limit to how much they can assist you. They've told me that there are some things in life that we experience, and they can't interfere with that, but there are other things that they can assist with. On another occasion, they took me on a craft after I'd had a very serious nasal infection that went down into my lungs and gave me atypical pneumonia, and I actually nearly died. They took me on board and they performed a laser treatment, and the laser actually was a beam of light that came from the eye of one of the entities. Now, I hadn't heard of anything like that before, and so experiences like that I kept very quiet about over the years. I documented them and stored them away and watched and waited to see what else might come along. And I did hear from a lady many years ago who had been taught herself, she said, on a craft to use a beam of light from her eye in a healing procedure. So there's a wide variety of healing regimes that I describe in the book, including stepping out of my body when I was a 14-year-old teenager and actually manifesting in a grey form and working on the craft that night with humans who had various illnesses, assisting them in healing procedures. Well, but I've also been on what I call the hospital wing of a craft, where I've seen quite phenomenal technology that I wish we had in our world at present. One of them is a beam of energy of some sort that can actually see into the body. So when they focus the circular beam on my body, everything within that circle could be seen within the body. So they could show the ligaments, tendons, etc., muscles. They could show the organs. They could show the bones, etc. And we're only in the very early stages of developing this. I hear that they Google, I think, is developing glasses that nurses can wear to assist them to see veins in a body when they're giving people injections or taking blood. But, you know, I remember this from way back in the 80s and 90s. This kind of technology just wasn't around or hadn't even been imagined by us then. But I'm describing things that is only just starting to come out in our own technology now.
You mentioned about you wish we had that technology on Earth. Why don't we? Why don't they give it to us? You know, you mentioned in the book throughout that they're concerned about humanity, what's happening to us. They want to help us and help themselves. Why wouldn't they share that with us?
Yes, well, the answer that I've always got when I have discussed this is that we are prone to using technology in very selfish ways and in destructive ways, and we tend to take technology and develop it in a way that is either going to be extremely profitable for someone or turn out to be extremely harmful to someone else. So I think the whole process that I describe in the book of this positive agenda is bringing our spirituality level up. We are developing all kind of technology, but which is great, but our spiritual application to that technology and the way in which we develop things and use things is not always a positive thing for the people of our planet. And we all hear about technology that could help many of us that is actually developed for other means. So
that's for sure.
They are telling us one step at a time. You know, we need to bring our spirituality up, our understanding of self. We have to do self-examination, both as individuals, as communities, as countries, and globally. And this could take a very, very long time. If they hand us things on a plate, where is the learning in that? Now, I'm a retired school teacher. I know that to teach a child something, you have to have repetition, you have to have a good instruction, and you have to have time to practice it. And these are all things that we need to apply to ourselves and ask ourselves how we can actually help ourselves, because that's what they are trying to do. They're trying to assist us to help ourselves, not hand things to us on a plate that we can then take out there and misuse.
Seems like the technology that you describe that they have is just a little bit ahead of what we have. You know, and that's been sort of the story with UFOs and flying saucers. It's just tantalizingly out of our reach, just a little bit ahead of us, and it always stays ahead of us. And I'd like to ask Rudy about that. We're going to take a break here in a moment. In the next segment, we're going to open up the phone lines. But before we take questions from our listeners, I want to get into sort of the ultimate message of your book, Susie, and that is preparing the world, preparing humanity for something that's coming down the line. It seems like they know what's around the corner, and it sounds like it could be pretty dark. At least that's the indication. You know, we've had over the years in ufology, you get these alien editorials. They tell us to stop blowing up nuclear weapons, take care of the planet kind of a thing. We never heed those warnings, and the aliens, the visitors, never seem to help us much beyond the warning. But we're going to get into what might be coming, because you've had those conversations. My guests, Susie Hansen and Dr. Rudy Shield, will be right back with more Coast to Coast AM.